Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Hi, Dominique. Hi, Kayla.
Morning.
Hello, Laurie.
We have a guest today. I'm really, really excited. Isabel is with us today. And Isabel has been connected with Allies in Recovery for a really long time. We're really excited to have Isabel come and speak with us today because she's going to speak on a very specific topic, which are romantic partnerships and applying craft. So my thoughts are, Kayla, Dominique, do you have a question or anything to get started with Isabel?
Well, I think it's just tell us your story, Isabel, and then the questions will come. So tell us your story.
Okay. So thank you for having me, first of all. I was happily married and to the father of my first two children. And over the years, a drinking problem kind of set in. And this is before I discovered craft. So I didn't have any of that framework to try to help him. And like many partners who haven't discovered craft yet, I tried what I thought was everything. I resorted sometimes to pressuring, guilting. I didn't do a lot of threats, but I'm sure there were some. I was ignorant about substance use disorder for the most part. I loved him and I was really lost, really, really lost about how I could possibly help his situation and save our marriage, which was definitely heading downhill as he continued to drink kind of more and more and then daily and then start hiding the alcohol in different parts of the house, probably also because I was hounding and really kind of stalking him and with the drinking. And the denial on his part was just exponential. I didn't know a person could have that much denial. There was no dialogue possible. And anyway, that portion of our life ended when I decided that it was just kind of a dead end for us as a relationship, as a married couple. And so I left, and that was 11 years ago. And within a year or a year and a half, Allies in Recovery actually came to get me through a fortuitous connection. I ended up starting to work with Allies in Recovery, the online version. So after the first chapter of Allies in Recovery, which was an in-person office and structure in Northampton, Massachusetts. So then I was working with Allies. I discovered craft. I realized, oh my God, I could have done something for that relationship. I could have possibly saved my marriage. It was too late. And my ex-husband was spinning out of control, starting with the divorce right around that time. So I realized it wasn't too late to be helpful. It was too late for our marriage, but I started diving into craft and started applying that with him as the father of my children, as my ex-partner, as a friend, as a human that I love and respect deeply and want to see doing well. I guess that's the nutshell. So it's been 11 years, and it's been almost 10 years that I've had knowledge of craft and been applying craft and seeing beautiful advances and results as a result of that. And that little by little, also drawing in our children who are now old enough to be able to apply craft as well to a certain extent. So that's where we are, and we still are in each other's lives. And I just learned today from a mutual friend that 2 months of sobriety stopped somewhere around today or yesterday, and he's in another phase of drinking, of using right now today. So we're in this phase of early recovery, really that the spiral graphic that we see on the Allies site. Really switching on and off and on and off between using and not using at the beginning, which I've shown him, and which it's comforting to me to know that this is normal. And just backtracking one moment, he did go into inpatient treatment for the first time in this entire history. And I'd say the drinking has been going on for 15 years or so. So that was last June. So it's been almost a year since that treatment episode. And since then, it's been on and off sobriety, early recovery, kind of typical back and forth.
Isabel, you keep mentioning this applied craft that you're talking about. Can you describe what you're doing differently with the application of craft with them?
Yes, and I'll try to be succinct about it, because I really love craft. From the moment I read about it and learned about it, I felt like, duh, like this is so obvious. It seems so obvious once you start to look into it and understand how it works. It's so common sense, even though sometimes there's some, you have to almost trick yourself sometimes out of your own habits, communication habits and stuff like that. But so I'm a huge fan, and so I apply as much as I possibly can. And that includes extracting myself from the guilt of what happened, you know, to my family, and to not being able to fix it all for him. So a lot of, you know, self-care, a lot of stepping back to a place where I'm taking much better care of myself, keeping my feelings kind of in check, and a place where I can be much more solid in order to be also there for him, in order to be someone he can come to if he's drawn to doing so, as a support. So really, like, the whole self-care module, you know, in Allies in Recovery, you could see it as a module, but it's such a huge one for me. And for me, it's the foundation of everything, because it's what allows you to do all the rest of craft. So taking better care of myself, realizing it's not my fault, it's also not his fault, moving away from those tendencies to blame, and what I mentioned before, you know, all the guilt and all those complicated feelings that get sticky and mixed up when substance use comes into a relationship. I've been practicing rewarding when there's no use. And so that can be with my presence, that can be with the access to my youngest child, who's not his child, but who he really loves. Just bringing her in, bringing me in, bringing warmth in moments of non-use. Also just trying to be a real open heart and ear to him, and when he wants to talk in those moments of non-use. And then trying to make myself more scarce with a short explanation of why in times where he's using or still coming out of, you know, hungover or something like that. What else? So lots of rewarding. So, and the natural consequences has been, oh, it's just so brilliant. That has been a big one. And I really do think that can be for us. I've seen how it has brought him closer to, you know, more clarity about what's his part, what he needs to do, what is his responsibility, what no one else can get him out of, what no one else is going to be able to do in his stead. Natural consequences, i.e. when it's safe to do so, letting him feel the full weight of his choice, whatever the choice was. And I do underline when it's safe to do so, because there have been situations, especially involving our children or involving him and vehicles, where I couldn't just act like, all right, you just wake up and see how you feel tomorrow. You know, so the natural consequences when he's made bad decisions, when he's using and he has really messed up, or he missed something, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So many negative consequences that come from using, whenever possible, letting him feel the full weight of those by not intervening, or inversely, or I don't know, not conversely, I guess it's inversely, bringing him to the hospital so that he can, when he comes back, you know, when he comes to, or sobers up, look around and realize this is the consequence of what I decided to do. And so that was an intervention, but an intervention, you know, kind of like a liaison, you know, bringing him to the hospital, bringing him to other professionals who are going to, in a sense, in a way, hold a mirror up to him and let him feel those consequences, or calling the EMTs when I had to leave and he was clearly in a terrible state and quite had drunk a lot of alcohol, but was also extremely low, calling in the EMTs and I had to run off with our daughter, who unfortunately he wasn't able to say goodbye to as she was leaving for a school year, leaving the country. And that natural consequence was, we were both, you know, she and I were both crying, and it was just horrible to leave like that and for him not to even be able to say goodbye to her on that morning. But I knew what I was doing, and I knew I was crafting hardcore, and I knew it was natural consequences. And I can't remember what the phrase is that you all use on the site about, I guess it's, you know, let the first responders come in whenever that feels appropriate at all. So that was a long answer.
That was actually a great answer. I love everything that you said, Isabel. And I think it's really important for other listeners who are in these romantic relationships to understand how difficult, I mean, that's a hard thing to do with your daughter, but to support her through that and the two of you together and allowing for natural consequences, that's a tough one, but sticking through it. And also understanding that it's not his fault, right? Like it's not his fault, but he's got to be the one to come to a particular understanding about himself. So I really, really thank you for sharing that. And I'm hoping that we can also go back to something you had said earlier that our listeners haven't heard. And you could talk about maybe intimacy in the relationship with him and just how, you know, you were applying craft and you really didn't know you were applying craft. But I think it's a topic that partners, we don't talk about it enough, intimacy and dealing with substance use disorder at the same time and what that looks like. And so do you mind kind of getting into that particular topic?
Yeah, I don't mind at all. As you mentioned, the what I have to share has the specificity of when the time that we were together, I didn't yet know craft, or I didn't know I knew it. And now the time that I did know craft, we haven't been together. But still, I do have observations and I do have questions. Yeah, I would love to share that. I find that it's one of the sticky or gray areas of craft for me, because I've learned from Alice in Recovery that so many things can be a reward for your loved one, and that can be your presence, that can be actual presence, you know, material things, taking a walk, making them a drink, or like not a drink, but like a warm drink, you know, like a comforting beverage, or you know, a plate of cookies when they walk in the door, whatever it is. There's so many opportunities, so many ways that you can show them, I see you, I see the effort you're making, I see this moment of sobriety, and you're really looking at just the bracket, you're just looking at that moment, because that's a victory in itself. And so you want to celebrate those. And I also learned through Allies in Recovery that even when we're nagging, it's a form of rewards, because we're there, we're talking to them, we're just, you know, we're paying attention to them, and that's a form of reward, even though there's some negativity obviously to it. They get used to it, and it's a fun little dance that, you know, that you do, not always so fun, but both people in that relationship end up getting used to that and finding some sort of comfort in it, you know, getting something from it, otherwise they wouldn't keep doing it. So taking, like, bringing your present, bringing yourself in, taking yourself out, like that all, it's like the hokey pokey. It makes sense. It's easy-ish to grasp for me. But when it comes to intimacy, And, you know, I mean that in the largest kind of sense of the term. So anything sex related, but also just kissing or being naked together. I don't know, taking a shower together or like a massage, you know, offering a massage or being offered a massage, for example, you know, those are just some examples. It just feels a lot more complicated to me because desire kind of has to be there in those situations. You can't, don't want to fake desire. At least I certainly don't. And so there can be a disconnect between the rewards that you want to give, the times that you want to give them, and whether you actually want to be intimate at those same times. And so that was something I found difficult. It was easier. It's the non-reward and the non-intimacy in moments of use that kind of comes naturally. At least it did for me. I could certainly also conceive of a situation where the loved one is using and they become more warm with their partner, and the partner finds that a good time to be intimate. But for me, it had the opposite effect, and it was organically pushing me away. And that was, and that involved my senses, like the smell of, you know, alcohol and cigarettes on the breath at the same time, and coming in for a kiss and blah, just like I'm moving away. I'm physically recoiling. And so all of that was kind of just kind of easy to do. But at the time, I didn't know how to recoil diplomatically. I didn't know how to do it craftwise. It got personal too quickly, you know, or the disgust factor or that real recoiling energy would come in. And I, when thinking back to it, you know, it could easily be hurtful and it could easily get personal. I didn't know at the time that I could just say you're using tonight and I'd rather sleep in the guest room, or, you know, just, you know, a whole bunch of phrases come to mind. Let's wait until the next time you're not using and we're both in the mood, and, you know, and leave it at that. I did at the time, and I do now still find it a little, yeah, sticky and gray area to know, my real question is intimacy a valid reward? And I guess it's like for me, it's like a really specific category in itself, and it's got to be taken as such, because it requires a lot more listening to yourself and the desire that's there or not there to be able to do it in an authentic way. I don't know. The gray area is seeping into me, and I don't feel like I'm being so clear, but I would love to hear what you guys have to.
Well, I think you just answered the question, okay? Because there's two things when it comes to intimacy. There's the most important one is how you feel, because you're not going to use it as a reward in an inauthentic way, just exactly what you said, because the vibes don't come across as a reward if you're just doing it for obligation or it's the thing that you feel like you're supposed to do. So I think the whole point of all the work that we're doing with allies is to be authentically responsive to somebody, because that's when they feel the connection and that's when they feel your presence. But on another note, one of the things I wanted to ask you is the balance issue, okay? Because it feels like it's one thing to be a parent of a child, but it's another thing to be a partner with somebody who's using, and how that affects the balance of responsibility, care, responsiveness, all of that. So if you could talk about that a little bit, that would be great.
Can I just interject before you answer that question? Because I'm hoping we can bring it back to craft for 2 seconds about the intimacy and rewards, because I think it's really important to point out that when rewarding your loved one, and we talk about this in our groups as well as it's on the website, right? It's in that module, the rewarding module. And one of the pieces of rewarding and craft says that you want the reward to be pleasurable to you and your loved one. So if sex is not pleasurable to you, right? That is not the time to be using it as a reward, because then it's not really rewarding. It's just an obligation. So thinking about it, and also, of course, what Kayla's saying, that intimacy is about connection, and you have to be a part of that connection. And if you're not feeling it in that moment, something else has to be worked on before the intimacy is really going to happen in a genuine and authentic way, like what Kayla was saying. So just think about that in terms of craft. It tells you, pleasurable to you and your loved one.
I'm also curious up the other side, which is having intimacy when he's not using, and finding probably relatively rare moments when the both of you are desiring and he's not using, how big a reward is that top shelf rewarding to the both of you or to him?
Trying to put myself back in that place.
How long ago was it? Okay, sorry.
Yes, I guess. I think it could have, maybe it's like middle shelf. I don't know. I mean, and I think it really depends on the couple and the individuals. Maybe if I had just had teeny bit more mindfulness of what I was actually doing and why. Obviously, I was following my own instinct, my own desire at those times. But to also be able to add in at that time, you know, one little whispered something in the ear that it feels so good to me to be with you when I've got you and the alcohol's not here, you're not around. It's like the old days, or I really can feel you, all of you, and it's great. It's great like this, you know, just kind of really underlining what's wonderful about those moments. If I, you know, had had a little more training or mindfulness at that time about, you know, it could have been top shelf in terms of the reward, I think. I'm sure it felt like a reward to him, but then there's also that thing about married couples and kind of like you just end up taking things for granted, you know, and you end up taking intimacy for granted a lot of the time. And I'm afraid that we certainly fell into that place, into that rut at some points. And yeah.
Yeah. I think it is a top shelf reward, and recognizing it and using it in an authentic way when you can, gives you both moments of some peace, some calm, some connection. Obviously, it's not one you're going to pull out very often, because a lot of things have to line up for it to happen.
Exactly.
But to be aware that it's a top shelf, and I don't know if you can get yourself in the mood when they're not using and you see a moment, but that might be something you're willing to adjust a little in order to use intimacy as a reward. You may not be willing to use intimacy as either a reward or a consequence, because it's just too loaded. There's intimacy problems are also part of every relationship. Typically there's something. And so we're not gonna use craft to fix that, but just in terms of its use as a reward and to hear you, just this deep reservoir of love and care that you have for him and wanting to do this and having tried. And it's just amazing that you're where you are today and the insights that you're sharing with us. Kayla?
Yeah, the one thing that I would add, and it's just a jump off of what you're saying, Dominique, it's that if you think about the work of self-care that you started with, it's that part of the work is increasing your awareness and having making intentional choices. And so if you put intimacy into that category, and, you know, and by the way, intimacy in all relationships with long-term relationships require these two things anyway. So it's like, it's the overlay. It's like, how do you make it this intentional moment? It's like, in some ways, it's like, okay, how do I get myself into the mood? How do I look at the good? How do I put out the connection, even if I have to kind of kickstart myself and it's not flowing naturally like it used to, but how do I make a choice at this moment to be connected in a physical way or an intimate way? And that you add that to your toolbox for both of you, because it's also, I feel like everything that we're doing with the tools of craft is making conscious choices, and that by following what feels good, following connection, we get fed at the same time. It's not just this gift that you're giving the other person. It's this awareness of like, oh, this is this lovely moment. Let me register it. Let me carve it out and make it into this very precious moment that could actually take on legs.
Which I would think can be very difficult in many circumstances with that romantic relationship piece of it, because I do think that when someone is using, drinking, when there are those moments when it's really heated and awful things get said to one another, and it really kind of can put that complicated twist on it. Like, how am I supposed to get myself in the mood, or how am I supposed to create this moment when right now I really don't like this person, right? I'm really, really reeling from this, which module 7, of course, comes into play. But that's still a really, really difficult thing for someone to be dealing with, I guess.
So module 7 on self-care, but also sort of what you're telling yourself and how it's pulling your emotions further down or further away, right?
What you have all said speaks to me. And certainly, I guess I had sort of forgotten that specific thing about how the reward, you need to choose a reward that you want to give. You need to choose a reward that you actually love sharing, that brings you joy at the same time. And obviously that is something that's going to speak to your loved one. And so that really does help to reframe a little bit that intimacy question and to always have that undercurrent of joy and of positivity and of authenticity in the actual choice of reward and in the moment where you're sharing that reward. The more real it is, the more real you are, the more real it's going to feel to them, the more connection they're going to feel. And so that all really does resonate. And I feel like I kind of remind myself of this on a regular basis that, you know, we as family member, we as partners, entourage of the loved one struggling with substance use, we have such high expectations of what they need to do. We have a long list of what they need to accomplish, what they need to change, what they need to flip around. And we often forget that we can do just as much shifting, growing, changing, learning, opening, letting go. It's parallel work. And it just kind of creates exponential possibilities, I think, in terms of what your loved one can then do, how you're supporting them. It just becomes so multidimensional. The more you're actually looking at yourself and what and your part in it all. And so, yes, what you were saying, Lori, about like, right now, I don't like this person, or I'm like still holding on to what happened yesterday or what happened last week. And I think that is, I totally recognize that, those feelings. And at the same time, it's always an invitation for us. We're asking them to take it a day at a time. We're asking them to consider sobriety today, even if yesterday was a using day. So why not for us put the resentment and the anger aside today, even though yesterday it was still really alive and raw. And I'm not saying forget, you know, what happened. I'm not saying forgive everything all the time. And you know, that's not what I mean. But I do think there's a lot to be said for turning a new page and always being ready to turn that a fresh page and be willing to see something in that person that we, in our loved one, that can maybe remember something in our loved one that we love about them, that we want to reconnect with, that we all, you know, that we loved from the start, and just always try to keep pulling back to that, like find, just keep pulling on that cord until you find something that reminds you of what you have together. It's obvious for the parent-child relationship. That's such a different love. It's so unconditional. And couples are often not exactly 100% unconditional love. So that is a place, I think that's one of the bigger challenges for partner craft, is finding ways to re-spark that unconditional, those unconditional feelings, or just remembering, finding some little thing to hold on to that brings you back to the underlying love and the power of the relationship that craft is based on, that craft uses as fuel.
And I think that what you're saying, Isabel, is that's the absolute core of craft, because you cannot do any of the work that we're asking you to do if that's not your main focus. Because here's this person that's behaving badly pretty routinely, or else you probably would not be listening to this podcast or using the work. So they're behaving badly on a regular basis, and they've lost track of who they are. They've lost track of their positivity and their strength and their beauty and their love, because they have gotten sucked into the undertow of finding the answer in this substance, as opposed to finding the answer inside of themselves. And what you're describing is this way of you being a reflection of that kernel of goodness, of the beauty that they have, of the love that they have, and that you're looking for it and you're watching for it and you're remembering it. You're the mirror for them, so that when they don't see it, you see it, even if it's just for these momentary situations. But if you're looking for it, you will find it. And that's what you're saying. If you stop looking for it because we've erased the person based on their substance use, and it's like, oh, they're just a substance user, you lose track of who they are. And all the work that we're asking you to do, which is find out what they're interested in, find out what is a positive reward for them, look for the good, remember who they are, and hold that space, love them. That's a lot of work when somebody's behaving badly, but it's the most important time to do it.
Totally. And it makes me think even that it could be an additional key observation exercise at some point, especially oriented to partners, just listing off all the things that you have loved about them, all the things that you loved about that person when you met them. You know, what are the good things that keep coming back, that are under there somewhere, that haven't disappeared completely, and in order to be able to pull them closer, to elucidate them more often, and as you say, look for them and find them.
One of the things that I often do in couples counseling when things are really bad, which is why they're seeing me, the first question that I ask is, tell me your origin story. Tell me what it was like when you met, because that's when all the goodies are clear. And that's when you actually chose the person, and there's things about them that you adore. And I think once you tell the story, you realize that you actually made a good decision with this person, and you didn't just make this horrendous mistake by choosing them. And I feel like what craft is about is keeping track of who's in there somewhere buried. And by having those thoughts, you can actually remind yourself as well as them.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.